You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is Imran, the Don Khan.
Yo, Blessing.
Imran, how dare you?
How dare I?
How dare you? You're leaving
me. This could apply to so many things. Yeah, I am leaving you. Look, I wanted to give you a full year of training you in Kinda Funny Games. And then, like, after that, I was going to be like, adios. Like, you've become, the student has become the master. Might as well just let Blessing take the reins and, like.
I didn't realize I was being, like, trained in this way. You know, if I knew, I would have, like, learned more lessons.
You really should have learned. He never realized.
Like, what were the lessons? What did I learn?
One, lie all the time. Mm-hmm. Because if you lie, then, like, no one's going to be able to know. No one knows if you're telling the truth or not. So, there you go. You get a ton of clout for nothing.
Are you going to confirm or deny you've been doing the thing where you tell one lie an episode to see if people catch it?
I've forgotten so much, like so many times. Like sometimes I do it, but it's like, I want to say it's like 50-50. That like,
That's awesome. Of course, if people are just joining and they don't know what's going on, Imran, you're leaving us. Can you catch people up if they haven't heard Gamescast yet?
Yeah, I will be leaving. Next week is going to be my last week here at Kinda Funny as a regular co-host. I'm leaving to go build out the news section of fanbyte.com.
I don't even know what that means.
It means I get to write more. Like that's exciting, I pitched an idea of I want to write about Mario Sunshine Mingi Yakuza game. They're like, yeah, sure. So that's basically the kind of thing I'm going to be doing from here on out. Like, but I will still be back here as often as I like my schedule allows. So I do not plan to be away from Kinda Funny for like a permanent basis.
Perfect. So this isn't goodbye. This is just see you later.
This is, I'm going to stay as involved as possible so I can keep getting game codes from Greg.
Perfect. I understand. That is actually a very good strategy because I would do the exact same thing. That's a very good plan. Imran, I'm upset to see you leave on a permanent basis, even though I know I'll still see you all the time. And I know like when things get back to normal after quarantine, like we were just talking, you're going to be at the studio all the time anyway, hanging out because you're still going to be in the area.
It's very possible I'm going to live near you at some point. So like,
yeah, it is.
Yeah,
we're hanging out, and we're gonna eventually take that trip to Sonic.
Yes,
I don't know how we've. Actually, I do know how we've not done that yet. Quarantine, yeah, but like, quarantine. We have to do that at a certain point.
We gotta do the Absolutely. Sonic trip. We gotta do the fried or the chicken sandwich thing, and we have to at some point just go to see Nurse Sig and like get a burrito.
Oh my god! So yes. Bad. We're doing it all. I cannot wait for the pandemic to be over, but that's so far away.
I have a short day today. We both wear masks. We can go to Mr. Sinig.
I don't have a short day today, though. Wait, how do you have a short day? We're recording in review later.
Yeah, I'm not on that. Tim just fucking booted me from it. He was like, ooh, Blessing's going to be on.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, it sucks.
Oh, so I took your spot.
Yeah, I guess. I'm the disposable one.
The Indiana Jones one, right?
Yeah, this is the Indiana Jones review, which we're recording later today, and I believe will be up tomorrow if I have that right. So look forward to that. You know what else you can look forward to? I'll let people know later. I don't want to spoil Indiana Jones review because I think it's gonna be a fun one. And so yeah, be on the lookout for that. Listen to it when it comes out tomorrow. But for today, let's talk about video game news. Today's stories for KFGD include PlayStation 5 sales figures, Embracer Group acquiring 3 more studios, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. housekeeping for you. A new episode of Gamescast is live right now. It's a full episode of what we've been playing. So we talk about things like Super Mario 3D World, Balan Wonder World, Destruction All-Stars, and more. That's up over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast talking services around Balan the globe. Wonderworld. Balan Wonder World.
I went and played the demo again. Like, I wanted to see what would happen if I changed the, like, to a boy or a girl or whatever. There's different CG cutscenes. Like, they're not just like one character replaced. They're different, and they change like a little bit for skin tone as well. So there's like six of these CG intro cutscenes in this game that is clearly hurting for budget.
That's awesome. They're like, we could do a palette swap on each of these and make the same thing, like any other game would. Or
do it real time or something. Something not to make six different CG cutscenes.
That is fantastic. If you're not familiar with Balan Wonderworld, again, listen to that Gamescast, because it is worth it just for the Balan Wonderworld discussion. Because that game baffles me. The demo is out now. Go check out the demo if you're inclined to, because it is something special. It is something special. Thank you to our Patreon producers. What was that?
I was going to say it sounds interesting, but I don't want to watch it. Tell me about it, but it's fine. Let's move on.
Let's move on. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Graham of Legend, David Mintel, Trent Berry, Blackjack, Louise Aguiar, James Davis, and the Nanobiologist. Today we're brought to you by Brooklinen and Honey, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have five stories today.
Don't leave.
Kevin, what was that? Are you good?
I am fine. What do you mean? Remember when Andrew was like, don't worry, I'll still be around. We'll hang out. She's not.
Well, she moved to LA. That's totally different.
It happens every time. It's the Gamescast curse, man. The Gamescast always gets somebody. At the beginning of the year, whenever you're on a predictions episode, the first Gamescast of the year, that means you're gone.
I'm just going to point out, Blessing, if they don't replace me on the Gamescast next year, that means it's you. That means you're the one who gets to
recognize
the
God. Finally, I can be free.
Let's just make a note. It's not really a curse as much as a gift. I don't know. Like, it's a good thing. You know what I mean? Like, his life's getting better. Everyone that's gone off to do other things has gone off to do better things, you know?
Their lives have improved, with the exception of maybe Jared Petty. Story number one. Let's talk about PlayStation 5 sales. Oh, that's Greg Miller.
You are not leaving. You are not leaving. Get that out of your head right now. All right. I'll put any other body on there. You know, I'll hire people for a day to get it. You're not going anywhere. You are ours for life.
That sounds like a threat. I don't like it.
Remember, you are here forever. I'm going to get the Mr. Burns plaque and put it in your room.
Oh, I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Too bad. You signed up for it. That was the contract.
Sweet. Cool. I'm looking forward to it. Infinity at Kind of Funny. Story number one. Finally, we have our PlayStation 5 sales figures. This is from Sam Bifford at The Verge. Sony has shipped 4.5 million PlayStation 5 units worldwide in 2020, as revealed by information published alongside the company's latest earnings report. The number highlights Sony's current ability to mass produce the console, which has been extremely difficult to buy since its launch in November. Demand for the PS4 dropped dramatically year on year, with 1.4 million units shipped in the October to December quarter, a 77% decrease from the previous year. Sony actually managed to sell fewer PS4s in the holiday quarter than it did from July to September. Sony's gaming business overall performed much better than a year ago, with analyst Daniel Ahmad noting that it was actually the best quarter in PlayStation history. Revenue increased 40% to 883.2 billion yen, that's $8.4 billion, partly driven by PS5 sales. Operating profit was up by 50% to 80.2 billion yen, that's $763.3 million, because of higher game sales, PlayStation Plus subscriptions, and better margins on PS4 hardware. Sony does note, however, that expenses related to the PS5 launch offset some of its profit gains, and also confirms that the PS5 hardware itself is being sold for less than it costs to make. A loss was incurred due to, quote, strategic price points for PS5 hardware that were set lower than the manufacturing costs, the company says. There's not much to read into PS5 sales numbers until people who But let me say it again. There's not much to read into PS5 sales numbers until people who want to buy one are actually able to do so. But at the very least, the console's launch seems to be broadly comparable in size to the PS4's. The PS4 also shipped 4.5 million units in its launch quarter. Imran, there's a lot of places we can start here. Where do you want to go?
So comparing it to PS4 is going to be very like helpful, like because PS4 is what, at 115 million units now. So like
floating around there, yeah,
yeah. So if the PS5 hits that, that's like we're at the point where almost every PlayStation console has sold over 100 million units, which is, you know, incredible and ridiculous and like great for Sony. This is not to impugn the PS5. Why? Obviously, our demand is far outstripping supply. Mm-hmm. Why? Like, what is it that people desperately want to play on the PS5, or they just want to own a PS5?
I mean, that's a really good question, right? Because, like, when it comes to launch stuff, Miles Morales was available on PS4, and we're going to talk about Miles Morales in a second because that's story number two. Because sales numbers for that is out too. I think it's a combination of things, right? PlayStation as a brand, I think, is very good at building hype and building anticipation for the next big box. And we, me and Greg have talked about this on PS Love You, that the PlayStation, the hype for next, for the for a new PlayStation launch kind of goes beyond just the gamer sphere. Like, I go on TikTok and people are talking about how they're going to buy their significant other a new PlayStation 5 for Christmas. Or people are talking about how, oh, I can't find a new PlayStation 5. People are talking about Miles Morales and all this stuff outside of just the gaming space, which I think is something that PlayStation marketing and PlayStation, I guess, PlayStation as an ecosystem does well, right? Like, it's that idea of, quote unquote, we believe in generations, which like we dispute or support depending on different things, right? Like, Miles Morales coming to multiple consoles doesn't necessarily support that, but the overall idea is there in terms of, yeah, we're trying to make the jump. The PS4 is selling less in this last holiday season, kind of supports that idea of people are very much on board with the idea of making the jump to the PS5.
Yeah, there's very clearly like you can see the demand go from the PS4 to the PS5 in this past quarter, which is not always the case. Like, PS3 did fall off a cliff, but like PS2 didn't. PS2 sold 50 million units after the PS3 came out. So like, it's interesting that Sony was able to so easily move new buyers from PS4 to PS5. But at the same time, they're also trying to, I guess, like, satiate old existing PS4 owners with stuff like Miles Morales, with Horizon, with, I'm just going to guess, God of War. Like, I don't exactly know where their head is at right now, but it seems like they want to serve all audiences, and they're doing a decent job of that. But they're not, they want new audiences to buy a PS5, and that seems to be what's actually happening.
Do you think the bells and whistles of the PS5 appeals more to people than we may think? Because like when we think of why would people make that jump, or why do people feel compelled to make that jump so strongly when we have games that are on both platforms? Like the games that are available on PS5 only, right, are games like Demon's Souls, which is a big game, but isn't the most mainstream like Hollywood blockbuster game. That is a game that's going to appeal to gamers specifically. And you also have like other games here and there, right? Ratchet and Clank is going to be a PS5 game. Do you think things like ray tracing and 4K and all this different stuff appeals more to people than we give it credit for?
I really don't know. Like, if you asked me 10 years ago, like, would the technical aspects of a box, of the console, be a selling point for John Consumer? The answer would probably be no, but like, maybe people just know a lot better. Like, if you go into a Best Buy, and don't go into a Best Buy because of COVID, but if you went into a Best Buy and you saw like all these TVs saying like, this one's 4K, this one's QLED, this one's blah, 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 I guarantee you most people wouldn't be like, oh, I know exactly what that is, but they would go, I know this is better. And I think that's what drives a lot of like console stuff now too, of like, I don't exactly know what the why the PS5 box says 8K or what ray tracing is exactly or what it does. But I know that like this screen of Miles Morales looks better than that screen of Miles Morales. So like, I'm interested in this thing. And I think that's that's like half marketing, and that's what they've been doing. That's what the video game industry has been doing for years. Like, batch processing didn't mean shit, but people knew it was a thing, so they called it up on console wars arguments and stuff like that. I think for Sony, it is like, is a wallet opener in some ways of like, okay, maybe you don't know exactly why this is better than the PS4, but we're telling you the numbers are higher, so go ahead and buy one.
Yeah. I listen to a podcast called the Joe Budden Podcast, which is like a hip hop culture podcast, right? Of three dudes just kicking it. And that podcast has nothing to do with video games. There have been multiple times while listening to that podcast where they reference like, oh yeah, I just bought a PS5, or oh yeah, I bought my nephew a PS5. And to your exact point, they're like, every time I've heard that like statement or heard that sentiment outside of gaming podcasts, it's never really accompanied by, oh, we bought it for X game, or we bought it for 60 frames per second, or we bought it because of this reason. It does feel like we bought this for the same reason why we would buy the new Nike shoe, right? Like, it is this awesome, like it's this cool thing that everybody's all about. It's the zeitgeist, it's the next step. I've been told I can play new games on it. Cool, let's go. Like, I'm down to jump into the next console generation because the idea of that of itself is exciting.
Yeah, I was on BBC a couple of months ago, and they were like, the news person was just like, okay, so just explain these new consoles. Like, why do people want them? Why is there such a fervor? I'm like, that's such a broad question. I don't know. Like, that, it's better. Like, that is the long and short of it, is it's better. The load times are better. The graphics are better. And I understand when the PS4 and Xbox One came out, because the previous generation was just going on so long. I feel like maybe there's like an equivalent pent-up thing of like, God, the load times of generation got so like got just increased in length so much, or these consoles were so weak that I didn't feel like we got a real improvement over the course of generation. So I'm eager for like a big new like beast of a console. Like, maybe that's what's really driving it here, which is, you know, perfectly reasonable for a new generation to do.
Do you think when it's all said and done that this will be the best PlayStation launch?
I mean, no, because like right now it's matching the PS4 and they can't sell enough. But like, I think.
Do you think though in the longer run it ends up like outpacing
the PS2
or the PS4 or the PS4 specifically?
The PS4, yes, probably, maybe. Like, the PS4 also launched against like the Wii U and the Xbox One, which meant it had like no real competition. But the Series X is, I think, a little bit more capable in terms of market viability. And the Switch is basically just shattering records left and right. So it might be a bit harder, but you know, we'll see. It has a decent chance, but it's got to like really pick up momentum fast and then carry it through the generation, which is going to be difficult. It's very easy to do as the market leader, but if you're like sharing the market leader position with like different kinds of things, then that's a bit harder. But also, COVID could like really change things up. We don't know like how much that is going to change the home console market in terms of sales. So it is more of an open question. I do think they're kind of blowing it with this like sort of anemic launch schedule of like, we had two games last year. We have Destruction All-Stars yesterday. Returnal is next month, April something?
The Returnal got delayed, so I think it's May now. kindoffunny.com/you're wrong.
Okay. And then right, Ratchet and Clank hasn't been dated yet, which could come next month, or it could come in like June. Who knows? But like
April 30th is Returnal.
Okay. I feel like there should be a bunch of more games right now, but like also people don't own PS5, so maybe they need to be careful of the fact that like right now people want a PS5 regardless of what games are also out. They need to watch out for the sudden flip of, why do I want a PS5 if no games are out right now? What is that really doing for me? So like, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if it does happen, then that hurts momentum real bad.
Yeah, I mean, to my question of, is this the best PlayStation launch, or at least is this a better PlayStation launch than PS4? It's very hard to measure demand for the exact reason of, there's just not enough consoles to supply demand. And so right now it's neck and neck with PS4, but that's just because as many consoles that PlayStation can get out currently. So if you are talking about games, like compared to the PS4 launch, the games are way better. You know, the launch lineup, way better. Even in this first quarter, we're getting games like Hitman. We're gonna get Ratchet and Clank. We're gonna get Returnal, and we're gonna see how that does, right? And we're Horizon this year, and then also God of War is slated for this year. Whether or not we get it this year, we'll see. But that's a strong launch right there, right? I would say that's probably the strongest PlayStation launch there's been in terms of first year and a half or so.
Yeah.
And so, like, to the question of, is this the best PlayStation launch, or is this going to eventually outpace the PS4? My immediate assumption is yes, because games combined with the idea of COVID and how that spiked interest in games and game sales and all that, like, it seems like this is going to be long term. This sales pace is going to keep up.
I mean, hopefully for that, like, a bigger industry is better for everybody.
100%. Let's continue talking about PlayStation sales with story number two. Miles Morales has sold 4.1 million units in 2020. This is from Sheriff Saeed at VG247. Spider-Man Miles Morales has proven to be a solid hit for PlayStation. The game, which launched alongside the PS5 in November, has so far sold 4.1 million copies to consumers as of December 31st, 2020. The number includes PS4 and PS5 copies, both digitally and at retail. This is a decent turnout for a smaller scale expansion, but it is nowhere near the mega hit that is its predecessor, Spider-Man. By comparison, Spider-Man sold over 3.3 million in just 3 days and has now exceeded 20 million units since its release in September 2018. Miles Morales was never going to overtake Spider-Man in sales, of course, but according to third-party reports, it managed to sell more than Uncharted The Lost Legacy, the similarly sized and budgeted standalone expansion. That said, it's worth keeping in mind that Miles Morales will continue to sell well in the near future, as launch games often become must-owns for early adopters. Imran Khan. This article mentions that it was a given that this game wasn't going to sell as much as the original Marvel Spider-Man. For me, I don't know if that was the case, given that this game is still on the PS4.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see the breakdown of, like, Lost Legacy versus, like, the mainline Uncharted games. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it feels like a lower budget project, and it was a lower budget project. So, like, it makes sense that it's not, like, they're not, I imagine 3.3 million is at or above expectations for them already. 4.1 million.
Yeah.
I was going to say it has a very high PS5 attach rate, but I guess the 4.1 is between PS4 and PS5. So I also want to see the breakdown of, like, which went where. Like, I have not talked to a single person personally that I know. I know I've seen it on the internet, but I've not talked. No, I don't know anybody who bought a PS5 but did not buy Miles Morales for PS5. They either bought a PS5 or, like, didn't buy Miles Morales period for any system, or, like, just didn't buy a PS5 or, like, bought it on PS4. I would assume that, like, yeah, I'd assume that Miles Morales is going to sell better over time. Like, like the article says, like, I could see it being an evergreen title. Maybe Spider-Man 2 cancels out a little bit, but yeah, I think Miles Morales will do fine over time. And I don't see it hitting 20 million, but I'll see it, like, I could see 10 or 11, theoretically.
See, part of me is surprised that Miles Morales isn't selling in the way that Zelda Breath of the Wild sold on Switch, where there were reports after that release that Zelda Breath of the Wild was outselling the Switch, like, in terms of copies, right? Like, right. The actual attachment rate was higher than 1-to-1, which is a crazy, crazy thing to think about. I would have expected a similar thing from Miles Morales, but I do think that kind of comes back to the launch lineup for PlayStation 5 having multiple quality games there. So, like, you don't have, like, if you get a PS5, you don't have to buy Miles Morales. It's not the only thing for you to get. You could get Assassin's Creed. You could get Demon's Souls. You know, you could get Bugsnacks if you're buying a PS5 specifically to play Bugsnacks. Like, the options are there that I think means, which I think leads to Miles Morales not necessarily selling, having that 1-to-1 attachment rate, but still selling great because it's a Spider-Man game.
Yeah. Also, like, keep in mind, Breath of the Wild was, like, hailed as a once-in-a-generation kind of game. It's like, it's also launching for Switch. Miles Morales, very good. Doesn't quite have that same critical, like, praise that Breath of the Wild did. So I think Breath of the Wild is a very high bar in terms of, like, what a launch title can do for your console. It's not easily repeatable, even from, like, the best studios in the world. Like, it is just a difficult thing to like, get that level of hype and critical consensus around it.
Imran, let's keep on the sales train. Story number three, Borderlands developer Gearbox has been acquired by Embracer Group. This is Matthew Handrahan at gamesindustry.biz. Embracer Group has made its most significant acquisition to date with a $1.3 billion deal for Borderlands developer Gearbox Entertainment. That figure was given as the maximum value of the transaction, which will see the Texas-based company become a wholly owned subsidiary of Embracer Group. Gearbox Entertainment's 550-person team will join the Swedish group's 5,500-strong workforce. Gearbox co-founder Randy Pitchford will remain the head of the company when the deal completes. In a statement, Pitchford cited the appeal of Embracer CEO Lars Wingfors' strategy to create, quote, an allied partner group committed to fueling and accelerating the ambitions of a series of decentralized, successful, entrepreneurial companies while magnifying the collective value and advantages of diversification across the entire group. That's a damn sentence. There's so many words in that sentence, but you get what he means.
I can't picture Randy Pitchford saying those words.
I can't either. That's the funniest part about this is like, okay, this was written. Randy Pitchford is not saying that sentence out loud to anybody. That was definitely like included in the email. That was like overlooked by five different people. The feeling at Gearbox is that, and this is still a quote from Randy Pitchford. The feeling at Gearbox is that we are just getting started and this transaction is not merely a stimulant for the talent of our employee-owned company, but a propellant for the exciting future we have planned, Pitchford said. Gearbox is best known for Borderlands, but its catalog also includes the Brothers in Arms franchise. In 2016, it moved into publishing and has since launched titles including We Happy Few and Godfall. 2K Games has released a statement clarifying that its relationship with Gearbox and status as the publisher of Borderlands remains unaffected by Embracer's acquisition. Quote, the merger does not change 2K's relationship with Gearbox, nor our role as the publisher for Borderlands IP or any other projects we are currently working on with the studio. We look forward to continuing our long-term partnership with this incredibly talented team and delivering many more exciting entertainment experiences to gaming fans around the world. End quote. Imran, where do you want to start with this one?
Okay, so let me start with this. I'm not going to go to bat for like Gearbox being like an incredible force for the industry or like this incredibly creative, independent thing that needs to thrive. But this Embracer shit's getting scary of like they own 56 studios now. That is too many. They are making like it might be 58 after last night. Like the consolidation of the industry is getting bad. At some point in like 10 years, it's going to be like Nintendo and other. Like, that's it. That's going to be, like, the two gaming companies anymore. And, like, I'm not going to cry tears over Gearbox specifically, but, like, there's a lot of stuff that I feel like shouldn't be associated with the company that did an HNAMA, you know? Like, It should all be, like, diversified and separate and all that stuff. It's great that a lot of companies are getting money they wouldn't have gotten before. It's great that they're not shutting down. Like, that's cool. But I wish it wasn't, like, I wish I didn't feel like I was watching the Hydra takeover scene from Winter Soldier, you know? Like, everyone's going, like, Hail Hydra, and, like, everything just suddenly changes. Like, that's what it kind of feels like happening. And I know they're probably... I'm not going to say probably not evil, because they're such a big corporation.
Corporations are corporations, you know?
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. Like, I'm watching this sort of thing, and I'm someone who's been watching this for, like, damn near 30 years, and I'm like, this is not... great.
What's the name of the founder? Magnus something?
Is it?
Yeah, I think Magnus so. Something?
Of Embracer Group?
Yeah, right? Because we like, there was like a
Lars. The CEO is Lars Wingfors.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking. All right, never mind. I'm going to retract into my quiet down.
I'm going now, founder Embracer Group, because I want to know if there is a Magnus. No, it's Lars Wingfors is the founder and CEO, it looks like.
I see.
Yeah.
Lars Wingfors.
There's a Magnus Ling who was a project manager at one of their studios.
I must be mixing something up.
It's still not like the kind of villain CEO name you would see.
Yeah, no, Lars does sound like you are a villain of Mission Impossible. Like, you're going to come through at the end of the movie and then like throw money at people and they're going to shoot me or something. Like, that is that kind of name. This is a wild move. Like, for Embracer Group that has been making these types of moves over the course of, it feels like, what, like 3-4 years at this point, it's been such a wild journey from watching them like come up from Rise as being THQ Nordic. Kevin, you have it pulled up here. Is this that you're showing?
Yeah, it's him.
Oh, is that Lars?
Yeah, we were talking about him.
Oh, that dude has Mission Impossible villain energy for sure.
Right? For sure.
For sure. Oh my God, Ethan Hunt. For like to watch their journey coming from like rising as THQ Nordic and eventually becoming bigger and bigger and acquiring all these different studios and companies that are kind of in that mid tier, right? Like they really lived up to the name of THQ Nordic because they are acquiring all these AA mid tier developers and slowly becoming bigger and bigger. And now they've acquired Gearbox, which is a high tier AAA developer. Like Borderlands is a very profitable game. That game makes a lot of money. And my immediate question was like, okay, what happens to Borderlands? Like, how does that go? Because if Embracer Group is not going to make Borderlands money, you know, that's a big deal. And 2K still publishing, and so like there's still gonna be those splits there, but nonetheless, like that is still a huge deal that they're acquiring Gearbox.
A couple of things here. One, 2K says they're looking forward to continue the publishing. I imagine that changes. Gearbox owns the IP. I can see Embracer like maybe going, okay, yeah, let's just they can deal with it. Like they'll publish it, they'll pay the money, whatever. But at some point, you probably want that in house. So I don't think that relationship is going to last forever. They own the publishing rights to the first three games, so they can't go back. Maybe Embracer negotiates to get those to them. But yeah, I don't see that necessarily being a thing. Two, someone in chat was saying like Imran's going to hold that AMA over them forever. Yeah. Like they fucked up and they never apologized about it, and like increasingly that is a white supremacist or was a white supremacist site, is a site with like the people who, you know, the QAnon and all those kinds of people like congregated there and like gave birth to like the, you know, insurrectionist style fervor. Like they have a lot more to answer for these days.
They did an AMA on 8chan is what it is, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And they
This is like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And it's like they never reckoned with it, and like the people involved never like lost their jobs or anything like that. Like it's not it's a thing that I'm probably not going to forgive them for until they do say something. Because like just going like, no, it's fine. We acknowledged it, now it's over. Like, no, you need to do better than that, because that thing you did had a lot of cascading problems over the years. So I just want to throw it like, yeah, they suck ass, and I'm probably never going to let that go. Third thing, if I were buying Gearbox, I would probably want to get rid of Randy Pitchford. And that they haven't makes me think that they can't.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the way I take it, right? Because Randy Pitchford is the CEO of Gearbox, if I'm not mistaken.
He is CEO, founder, and sole owner.
Yeah, and so it is probably, you would have to give him like a huge lump sum of money or stock or shares or something, and make a deal with him in order for him to leave. Like I don't think there's anything that they can do unless he is actually willing to go.
Yeah, I think it's if he wants to go, he will go. But or they have to give him a ton of money to agree to it. But like, maybe a good case scenario here is that he will theoretically have people to answer to if he like abuses employees or doesn't pay them or things like that, which are all things we have heard. How accurate they are, I have no idea at this point, because there's just so many fucking stories about Randy Pitchford. But like, if those things happen, maybe like Embracer Group will be like, no, you got to pay your fucking employees. Like, you can't just tell them no. So maybe that is the silver lining of this, is that it could get better for Gearbox as a company.
Yeah. And I'll like, and yeah, I'm curious to see how that pans out, because yeah, Randy Pitchford is such a, like, he's like a lightning rod for controversy where.
No, because lightning rods get hit. He just does it. He causes it.
Like where he goes, there is destruction. And so during the whole rollout of Borderlands 3, where he's, you know, he has the thing at medieval times, right? Where he leaves the USB that leads to the whole legal stuff. Like,
yeah,
there is like a cascading effect that goes on around Randy Pitchford. That yeah, at the very least for Borderlands 3, I would have expected him to at least maybe be more behind the scenes than out there being the public figure that is speaking for Borderlands 3, because everybody's very aware of Randy Pitchford and the trash fire that was going around him at the time. The fact that he kept being that central figure for it, very weird. And yeah, if I was Embracer Group, I'd be like, hey, you know, like, we can't make you leave, but if you could maybe calm down a little bit, or like be behind the scenes from now on, or just not talk, that'd be great. Like, we would like that. But for the future, I imagine, I'm kind of with you that I imagine they do something. Like, I imagine that at some point they're like, all right, cool, what kind of deal can we make so that you go away? Like, how much money can we give you?
There were definitely plans. Like, so years ago, I went to a Borderlands 3 event, and at the time, they were very clearly trying to, like, Randy Pitchford was there, but he was, like, they were trying to transition, like, the face of Borderlands to, like, the director of the game. Because, like, and I remember all our interviews, like, oh, I want to interview Randy. He's like, no, we're not doing Randy interviews. He'd, like, talk to this person. And then he, like, partially because of me, ended up inserting himself into this story in a huge way. And, like, then he's just like, okay, I guess all the bad shit about Borderlands is going to be on Randy Pitchford's face again. So, like, I bet you could just try and convince him, like, maybe step back from this thing, but then he's going to just insert himself again. So we'll see how it goes.
Now, Imran, the Embracer Group acquisitions continue with story number 4. Embracer Group acquires 2 more studios. I'm going to start. I have 2 different articles, both from GamesIndustry.biz, that I'm going to go with. I'm going to start with Matthew Leandrohan, who writes about Embracer Group merging with EasyBrain in a $640 million deal. Embracer Group has merged with EasyBrain in a deal that will see the mobile publisher's owners become the 3rd largest shareholder in Embracer overall. Quote, EasyBrain has repeatedly demonstrated the capability to develop, scale globally, and operate category-leading puzzle games and logic games, end quote, said Embracer Group CEO Lars Wingfors in a statement. Quote, by joining forces with EasyBrain, we have meaningfully accelerated Embracer's mobile and free-to-play business, end quote. I'm going to add in another article from Marie D'Alessandri at GamesIndustry.biz, who talks about them acquiring Asper Media for $100 million. Embracer Group, via its wholly owned subsidiary, Saber Interactive, has acquired U.S.-based developer Asper Media by merger. Asper, based... Am I saying that right? Asper? Is it Aspyr?
Aspyr.
That makes more sense. Aspyr. Aspyr, based in Austin, Texas, will be a standalone entity under Saber Interactive. Its team of 140 developers will be joining Embracer Group, including its founders Michael Rogers and Ted Stalock, who will continue to lead the studio. Aspyr was created in 1996 and has a long-standing partnership with 2K Games to port its games. It's also known for porting the LucasArts franchise Jedi Knight to PS4 and Switch. The studio generated $40.6 million in revenue in 2020 and currently has several games in development, quote, including one major ongoing game development project with an approximate budget of $70 million, the announcement said. They don't stop, Imran. They keep going.
Yeah, so, like, I have nothing to say about EasyBrain besides the thing of, like, consolidation is, like, really creepy and bad. The Aspyr thing. So a couple of weeks ago, I think you and Tim talked about how there appears to be a Knights of the Old Republic game being hinted at. And everyone's like, who the rumors, I think Schreier was saying, was like, it's going to be by someone who is not a household name. But, like, when you think about it, it kind of makes a little bit of sense. It's not a big budget project. When I read this about Aspyr having a $70 million project that Embracer Group thinks is going to be very important for them, and, like, looking at their previous stuff, I kind of wonder, are they making a new Knights of the Old Republic?
That's a good poll. I mean, honestly, like, that's a very, very good idea right there. I'm, like, looking up Aspyr Media because I want to know what they've done for me recently. Because, yeah, they did do the port of Jedi Knights. They've done a few other games. I'm trying to find their portfolio.
Because, like, I'd be like, oh, it's going to be BioWare. But, like, based on the things people were saying around that rumor of, oh, it's not a household name, it's going to be lower budget. Like, Aspyr makes some sense. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, like, I can't think of what else. I mean, it could easily be something else. It could easily just be, like, whatever, a $70 million project. But, like, that rings to me like, hey, we're making a Star Wars RPG.
Yeah, I mean, they're not household name, and they do make sense. Like, they've done Civilization VI for mobile, a game called Light Matter that I've never heard of, but it has a cool name and cool art to it, too. A lot of Civilizations. I guess they ported Star Wars Racer for Switch and PS4. It's a lot of like porting they're doing, yes. A lot of working on other games. So they've done work on Borderlands also.
Maybe the KOTOR game is like a port of 1 and 2. Who knows? Like,
I mean, they talked about
that would be $70 million
in the story that me and Tim talked about, right? Like, the implication was that it was a reboot, like remake ish, but not the same game, you know? Like, yeah. The way I kind of took it was as maybe a Blue Point thing, where it is either KOTOR just done from the ground up and like replaced assets and story done up and all this stuff, or it's a reboot with like the same ideas and same concepts as KOTOR, right? It being this BioWare-ish RPG, but a brand new thing. And more, I can see that I can...
like High Republic game that might make sense too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean that's a really good poll. But again, like THQ or Embracer Group here is, I'm with you, that's kind of scary to watch. I'm curious to see what their end goal is, because obviously as a big company, their end goal is to make a lot of money. And by doing this, they're gonna make a lot of money, seemingly. Like, they've not blown up yet. They've not like hit the point where it's like, fuck, we acquired all these AA studios and now we're dying. It seems like it's working out pretty good for them. And Gearbox is kind of an objectively good pull, because you know that they're a moneymaker, and so like this seems like it's gonna continue.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it all works out. Like, right now, like I said, they have 50 something studios. They could theoretically put out 7 to 10 games a year, which is a lot. Like,
yeah,
not even like necessarily huge. Like, they own Coffee Stain, which is a great studio that does like their own diversity and inclusion programs and stuff like that, but like they made like Goat Simulator, so these are not necessarily like giant games. But yeah, I will see what actually happens, because they could be the most prolific publisher in the industry if they start committing to it, and yeah, that is also really scary, because I don't know enough about them to say like, oh, they're a good force for the industry yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they're gonna have a positive impact overall or not. Yeah. Do you think they continue to acquire bigger, because there was a story a couple weeks ago that talked about how they were setting up to acquire big, like they're setting up to possibly go for an EA or I forget what the other example is, but they're going for that size of publisher. Do you think that this was that, or do you think that possibly they're going to keep going and acquire bigger and bigger?
So to my knowledge, they did not seek out Gearbox. Gearbox was looking for a buyer. I heard a couple of months ago, supposedly Gearbox is looking to be purchased. So I imagine they went to Embracer. If Embracer is looking for something bigger than Gearbox, then EA has been on a lot of lists of like Tencent and like other companies basically that have been looking for big acquisitions. But it always feels too big for me to see someone buying them. I don't know where they would go at that. Like, if I were Embracer Group, I would maybe pick up like a smaller Japanese company. I've used this as Microsoft for an example, but like Koei Tecmo or something like that. Like, mm-hmm, that would make a lot more sense as a publisher that works with a lot of different IPs and works on mainly AA games.
Hmm. We'll have to wait and see. Imran, before I get to story number 5, I want to tell you about our sponsor. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Brooke Lennon. Life is too short to sleep between anything less than really nice sheets. But maybe you looked at some retailers and calculated the years of interest you'd pay on just one setup and gave up. Trust me, go check out Brooke Lennon. Brooke Lennon was started by Rich and Vicky, who also tried to find beautiful home essentials that didn't cost them an arm and a leg. And when they couldn't, they founded Brooke Lennon as the first direct-to-consumer bedding company. They work directly with manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without the luxury-level markups. Brooke Lennon has a variety of sheets, colors, patterns, and materials to fit your needs and tastes. Brooke Lennon has over 50,000 five-star reviews and counting. They are so confident you will love their products. They even offer a 365-day money-back guarantee. Brooke Lennon is so much more than sheets. They've got comforters, pillows, towels, even loungewear, and more. Kind of Funny loves Brooke Lennon. Tim has Brooke Lennon sheets that match the rest of his home. And Greg loves the comfortable towels and how they help him hide his shame. Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code GAMES to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more, plus free shipping. That's brooklinen.com and enter promo code GAMES to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more, plus free shipping. brooklinen.com and use promo code GAMES at checkout. We're also brought to you by Honey. These days, it feels like online shopping is the only shopping we really do. That's where today's sponsor, Honey, comes in. It's the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and automatically tests them when you're checking out. Honey is basically your online shopping best friend. Here's how it works. You get Honey on your computer for free in two easy clicks. Then, when you're checking out on one of its over 30,000 supported sites, Honey pops up and all you have to do is click apply coupons. Wait a few seconds as Honey searches for coupons for that site. If Honey finds working codes, it'll apply the best one to your cart. Kind of Funny loves Honey. Tim Gettys himself has used it for years and has saved thousands of dollars. He says himself, you are silly if you don't use it. It is free and easy. Joey Noel says it's great because you only have to install it once and then it pops up anytime you're shopping on a site to get gold back on your purchase. Greg likes Honey in his tea. He also talked about it yesterday. He does use Honey and he loves it, all that stuff. But when I asked in the Slack, hey, does anybody have anything to say about Honey? He replied, I like it in my tea. And so that's what I'm going to say. Greg likes Honey in his tea, which is actually a good choice because I also like Honey in my tea. Honey is very good. Honey has found its over 17 million members, over $2 billion in savings. Honey supports all kinds of retailers from tech and gaming sites to fashion brands to even food delivery. It's simple. If you have a computer, Honey should be on it. It's free and works with whatever browser you use. You can get Honey for free today at joinhoney.com/games. That's joinhoney.com/games so they know that we sent you. Thanks, Honey, for supporting today's episode. Our last news story for the day. Story number 5, EA is very, very confident about BioWare's future. This is from Rebecca Valentine, friend of the show, at IGN. Ooh. Following the departure of BioWare's former general manager, Casey Hudson, and Dragon Age executive producer, Mark Dorah, EA leadership is reassuring investors that it is very, very confident in the studio's future. During the company's Q3 earnings call today, CEO Andrew Wilson responded to a question from an investor about the recent departures by praising BioWare, while simultaneously acknowledging criticism over the studio's output in the recent years. Quote, I think that from an outside world, there have been some blips in BioWare's delivery over the last couple of years, but that has come as a result of them pushing deeply into innovation and creativity. And we feel very, very confident about their future roadmap. And we've talked about games like Dragon Age and Mass Effect in their future, end quote, he said. Quote, he continues, with respect to Casey and Mark leaving, both good friends of mine, and we have tremendous respect for both of them, but this happens in the natural course of creative organizations from time to time, and we feel very, very good about the ongoing leadership of that studio, end quote. Imran, do you feel very, very confident about the future of BioWare?
Like, the more varies you throw in a thing, the less it, like, the more it betrays what you're actually saying. It's like, we're very, very confident. Like,
yeah.
Maybe, like, describing the last couple of BioWare games as blips is interesting. Because they're
also describing it as the last couple of years when it has been the last generation is also interesting.
Yeah, like, what BioWare's output last gen was Andromeda, Anthem. Inquisition, which I think was good.
Yeah, that got Game of the Year IGN.
Yeah, and Anthem. Like, That's not blips. That is overall, we don't really know what we're doing. And the people you brought in to, like, right the ship have now left. Which, does that mean the ship has been righted? Or does it mean that they need to bring in more people to right the ship even better? Like, I don't understand. I after the Mass Effect stuff, I was like, cool. Mostly what this does is remind me of a time when I liked BioWare. So, does Anthem going, like, they said they were going to have a Realm Reborn it. Are they doing that? Is that still happening? Is that coming out soon? Like, is that for new consoles? Is that for old consoles? Can you show us exactly what that means? Like,
man, I hope so. Look like? I hope so, because, like, right now, BioWare is in such a fascinating place because they have had a generation of misses, with the exception of Dragon Age Inquisition, which I know people loved.
It could be a miss depending on who you talk to. There's some people who really like it, but some people don't.
But For what Mass Effect Andromeda was and for what Anthem was, I would have expected them to be in a similar place that CD Projekt Red is. And maybe this is just time distancing us. Maybe with time, we'll get to the same place with CD Projekt, where for their next project, I would be in the place where I'm like, all right, we'll see. Like, who knows, man? This developer is not what they were before. But with the announcement of Microsoft of Mass Effect Legendary Edition and with the embargo lifting yesterday of previews and people seeming to be very excited about it, they're in a very fascinating place because I think they still do have the opportunity to turn things around in terms of how they are viewed in the eyes of their fans and the eyes of the audience, where Mass Effect Legendary Edition is kind of a golden ticket because this is their shot to have a W in the span of a number of years where they haven't had a W. Even Anthem Next, right? Like, them not saying anything, fingers crossed, I hope, is a sign that they're churning away and working on it and doing something. In reality, I think that game's just done. I think they've given up. That's kind of where I'm at. It's been years since Anthem, and so, like, who knows what they're doing with that thing. But Mass Effect Legendary Edition does present for them an opportunity to, like, all right, cool. People like this. Like, it's the Mass Effect games people love already. And so if we can just pretty this up and, you know, make it look like a quote-unquote current-gen game and deliver it to people and have people excited about this thing, that's going to set us up in a good place, hopefully, for the next Dragon Age and the next Mass Effect, which are both announced, which is going to take a while to get out there.
There's two things I want to hit on there. One is, I kind of worry that BioWare is going to be like, you know, that Inception. Like, you've seen Inception, correct?
Yeah.
I don't want to assume anything with you, Blessing, in terms of movies.
I've seen Inception a number of times.
Okay. Like, that line of, like, being old men talking about, you know, I don't remember the entire line. I shouldn't have referenced a line I don't remember. But, like, that kind of thing of them going, like, hey, we made Mass Effect. Mass Effect was good, right? You remember those things? You remember the old Dragon Age games? We made those. Those were good. Like, you've got two projects you've already announced. God knows how far along they are. Like, yeah. We've seen, like, literally models on a blank or a void, a black void for Dragon Age, and we've seen a CG teaser for Mass Effect. Are those games going to come out this generation? Do we, like, I assume Dragon Age will, but, like, is Mass Effect, like, what is Anthem going to be a thing that you waste your time on at this point? Like, are you going to do an Anthem 2? Is it worth it to, like, rehabilitate this game that probably will never get a sequel? Like,
that's the thing that that fascinates me about Anthem also, is that, like, in the best case scenario, God shines down on BioWare and they do it. They fix Anthem, they bring Anthem to current gen consoles, Anthem turns out to be a comeback success and has an active community and all that. What does that do for their next two game, like, two AAA big budget games that they're working on, right? Like, can you juggle those three at the same time? Does that mean you scale? Does that mean you hire up? Like, what does that look like for you guys?
What is BioWare now? Like, it's the Ship of Theseus thing. Like, they've replaced and changed so many parts of it. Is anyone who's there now who was there, like, the previous games? Like, there was a screen yesterday of when they were releasing those Mass Effect screens of Eden Prime. And I don't remember if you've played Mass Effect before. Blessing.
No, I'm not.
No. Okay. At the beginning of the game, you go to a colony that's currently, like, shit's going down in a bad way, and it's supposed to look like hell on earth because, like, the sky's red, it looks real bad. The screenshot they showed of the updated version was, like, sunny skies and, like, some battles going on, and, like, okay, whoever made the scene originally is not there anymore, because otherwise they'd be like, what the fuck are you guys doing to my scene? Because, like, this, I kind of wonder, like, is that, there's obviously probably talent still at BioWare. Is it the same talent? Is it the people who got what made Mass Effect good back in the old days? And that's, I'm not going to say no, but it's an open question. Like, I'm going to look at the Mass Effect 4 or whatever they call it as suspiciously, because I don't know what is grounding that game besides the fact that it's, hey, it's Liara again. Hey, it's a universe I liked before.
Mm-hmm. Imran, very excited to see what they end up doing with Mass Effect 4 and the next Dragon Age and their whole portfolio in general. I'm very excited to see if they're able to turn it all around, but the release of those games are probably just so far away. If I went and it was coming out to mom and grab shops today, where would I go?
I'm going to try and do this from memory. The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Got it spot on. Congratulations, Imran. You got a week left and you nailed it. Out today, we got Hebroxia 2 for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, Vita, and PC. And then from Pushware, PS5 firmware update 20.02-02.50.00 is available to download right now. The following, and this is according to the firmware notes, the following issue was resolved. The PS4 version of the game was sometimes installed from the PS4 game disc, even after upgrading the disc version of a PS4 game to the PS5 version. So that's fixed. You can now select and edit video clips using Share Factory Studio from your media gallery, and then this system software update improves system performance. New dates for you. Blastful is coming to Nintendo Switch on February 25th worldwide, and on PS4 on February 23rd in America, and on February 26th in Europe. 100 Days will be out on May 13th on PC and Google Stadia, and then Creative Assembly has announced Total War Warhammer 3, which will arrive in 2021 for PC via Steam and Epic Game Store. Imran, of course, people can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to write in with their questions and their squad ups. I got a squad up for you. The other Sean writes in with a squad up, and it's a very simple one. The other Sean writes in and says, honestly, not looking to play anything at the moment, but if you want a KFBF to follow you back, I got you. If you want to add the other Sean on PS4 and PS5 for shits and giggles, their username is the other Sean, all one word. That is TheOtherSHaun. The other Sean.
Get it. Hustle.
Hustle. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you wrong. You write in a list of what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Let's see here. Okay, that's not a year wrong. All right, Rothko writes in and says, Aspyr ported the KOTOR games from Mac from early on. So again, Imran's on to something here. I didn't even think about that when you mentioned Imran. That like actually kind of blew me away because I did not put two and two together, but that makes a lot of sense.
We'll see it if it materializes.
Let's see here.
More of a Star Trek joke there at the end there.
All right, that's not a year wrong either. And so we nailed it, Imran. We killed it. What was that?
We're never wrong. And I don't remember if I lied in this one. So.
Oh my God. I really do want that montage of all the Imran lies that we just didn't catch over the months.
I don't remember any of them. So.
God.
All right.
Anyway, tomorrow's hosts for the show are Greg and Tim. And then Friday, we get Greg and Laura Kate Dale for our Kind of Funny Spotlight. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is Snowback Mike and Greg playing some of that Division 2 with a star-studded cast. And so stay tuned for that. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, game daily.